Hi, this is my favourite Elliot Smith song. This podcast is all about trying to keep Elliot Smith's legacy alive in our own very small way. And we do that by speaking to well-known fans about their favourite song of his. So hi and welcome to our final episode of the season. Our guests today are Will Taylor and Nick Hill, who together make up the band Flight. Will and Nick are both very talented songwriters, and as Flight, have released 3 studio albums so far, with their most recent record, which is self-titled, coming out towards the end of last year. They've also worked with some very well-known names too, including the likes of Madison Cunningham, Laura Marling, and the actor Florence Pugh. I first saw that Will was an Elliot Smith fan when I read an interview with him where he listed the Elliot Smith self-titled album as one of his favourite records of all time. So I got in touch with him and set up this conversation, which Nick very kindly joined. In it, we talk more about that self-titled record, we discuss what Elliot might have been like at school, and Will and Nick delve into their favourite song pick, which they seemed to telepathically agree on. So here are Will Taylor and Nick Hill from Flight.
I'm Will Taylor.
And I'm Nick Hill. We are Flight together.
Yeah, together. We are. So Nick wasn't necessarily aware this was happening, and we were just working on music today. And I was like, Nick, you've got to come in on this Elliot Smith podcast. So I've done the choosing for us.
I think you've chosen very well.
Chosen wisely. Mm-hmm. It was so funny. It was like an immediate impulse. I know. I when you brought it up, I thought, oh, well, that'll be a tricky decision. But actually, immediately, it was coming up Roses from his second album, his self-titled second album. I don't know why it was just such an easy one, because I think it's brighter and Beatlesy and sort of beautiful in those chords and yeah, kind of poppy and bright for him, yet it's still in that incredibly dark place.
I think the style of the lyrics is something that we would relate to as well. There's something in it that we, you know.
Well, us as writers, yeah.
Yes, I think so.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm drawn to that.
I think we've always been drawn to that song for a mysterious reason, but maybe we can unpack it on this podcast.
Yeah, that sounds good. It's the place, certainly the place to unpack it. Nick, you mentioned that you were kind of drawn to the writing of it. And like, what kind of aspects do you think kind of work for that song that you relate to as Flight?
I don't know. It's just sort of shrouded in this very simple metaphor, which is something that we like to play with. Is just sort of like this. It's not over complicated. It's just sort of. It's very clearly about one thing, and which is, I think, taking heroin. But he's doing it, and he's just sort of. I don't know.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. So it's very clearly he's sort of there with the bare light bulb and this sort of unadorned flat. Sort of feels like he's in a basement because he's sort of burying himself, and it's at night with the moon. And, you know, the coming up roses being this sort of, I'm making a big assumption, but it feels like the plume of blood being extracted into the syringe and the cold white brother, you know, alive in your blood. So he's not being heavy handed, but he's being very clear that it's like, it's about taking heroin. But, you know, I never once felt it was. It's just a kind of impartial listener, just listening to it before I kind of evaluating the meaning of it. And I guess that's a lovely thing. I suppose we've always taken influence from him with our writing is how to obfuscate what something's about. So take something, for instance, like incredibly dark and brighten it, you know, do the opposite with it. And he's so good at that. He's such a master at that. He'll take the most intricate and beautiful, kind of thoughtful, precise kind of run of chords and melodies, and then he'll smuggle in this very, very simple, very dark message.
And you could almost listen to the song and let it wash over you if you wanted to.
But if you choose to zero in on it, you just get this wealth of stuff you can rifle through.
And he's being just so clever. I mean, try and get anyone, you know, most writers to use that as a theme and get away with it, you know, and pull it off. It's a really, really difficult thing to make not sound either, you know, trying to be cool or especially dark, that it's kind of difficult to listen to, you know. I think it sometimes can feel quite adolescent when people sing about drugs. And, you know, it's just testament to his skill as a poet to be able to pull off that specific theme so well.
He has kind of a reference to the moon in there. And I was reading an interview with him where he's talking about this song and the kind of the use of the moon as a reference, which crops up in quite a few of his songs and in quite a lot of his work. And he talks about how it's an overused image, but it's okay to use overused images if you find a new way of doing it. And referring to the moon, as he does in this song, as a sickle cell, which kind of again brings it back to this like kind of blood drug reference. It seems like quite a new way of doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's an interesting one too. Taking we have this in our own writing, but also when we're writing for other people too. When there's something like the moon, for instance, just much explored imagery or anything that sounds like it could potentially be hokey or played out or corny. And I think for us, it's always like a challenge we want to go towards every time. It's just like, well, let's find a way of making it not corny. And he really is the king of that. Like, what a good example. The moon's a tough one.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever tried to take on the moon in any of your songs?
I think there's a song called White Roses where we're talking kind of about the planets and the sky, but we were really referencing an Auden poem there anyway, so it was sort of we snuck it in there by referencing a poet. We're not poets, we're lyricists.
The moon is a sickle cell, it'll kill you in time.
In Coming Up Roses, I think going back to what you were saying before, Will, the sort of the idea of Coming Up Roses, the phrase kind of is a hopeful thing, right? Like things are going to turn out okay. But obviously it's juxtaposed with what seems to be the material of the song, which is, as you say, about, you know, kind of referencing this drug taking.
Yeah, it's happy sad at its finest. It's a beautiful... That's how he's pulling it off. If we want to dissect it, he's taking a seemingly dark thing and reminding us that maybe he or whoever he's writing about is actually feeling quite wonderful about the act of getting high, and that's another thing, sad irony.
That's,
you know,
kind of another thing that maybe we draw from in our songwriting is using a title like "Coming Up Roses," which is just an everyday phrase, and trying to sort of extract and imbue it with meaning and try and see a few angles, like write a few angles into it. And I think that's what he's doing with it, which I love.
Yeah, totally. I wonder if we're comparing it to ourselves. I don't know if we should just be fanboying on Elliot Smith. Yeah. I don't know what the format of this podcast is.
To use an Elliot Smith reference is very much a kind of either or scenario. You're welcome to relate it back to the stuff that you do. I think it's also interesting to hear about how, you know, Elliot Smith influences your work and how you've seen stuff that he does and how you can relate it to yourself. So it's absolutely fine to do that.
Yeah.
I think one thing on that message. You mentioned at the beginning, Will, that you see the song as kind of Beatles-y, and listening to your music, I think you can really hear Beatles influences coming through. And do you have that? Is there a kind of a thread that goes through Elliot Smith, the Beatles, and the stuff that you do that you recognize?
Yeah, I think there's always like a shared sense of community, like through the years, I think, with people who are quite so, you know, Beatles orientated. It's really not every musician that is. That's the other thing, you know, a lot of people are quite anti the idea of being too Beatles orientated. Some people, it's funny how many people you meet who are just like, I hate the Beatles. I think they're overrated, and I like The Fall, and that's it. You know, and it's an interesting one because over the years you realize, oh, it's like anything else. It's like the blue dress and the gold dress thing, where it's just that you get it, you know, and when you do, you see it as, you know, as in its full majesty. You're kind of on board or you're not. And with songwriters, yeah, I mean, you hear it, you know, from the minute the Beatles began, you have people obviously in their wake being heavily influenced by them. But it's funny with Elliott Smith because I think for a lot of people, it's quite masked, even though I think to us, it feels so obvious how like heavily, heavily influenced he was. And you can hear a lot of British influence in his work. You know, you can hear a lot of, you know, Nick Drake and John Martin, that kind of era of Island Records stuff in his playing, and Simon and Garfunkel, just big, big hitters. And I think that because he's, you know, Portland and California, and he's in that area of music in the 90s, he's got this incredibly American tinge, you know, and not just American, but like that specific kind of emo American 90s vocal, which I remember at school would put off all my friends. People wouldn't want to get on board with him. It just sounded too, like, it reminded, they thought they were listening to this sort of stripped down Blink-182 or something.
Yeah.
which is so funny because I think that, at least for growing up in the early 2000s at school, for me, that was like a barrier for a lot of the people around me. And I just remember thinking, no, this is just the Beatles, but just darker and more interesting. And as you were saying earlier, Nick, that, you know, if he was in the Beatles, they would have been a better band, you know, which is amazing. You can't say that about many people. Mm-hmm. But there is a kind of a lovely thread there. And you can hear it later on as well. He's clearly getting really influenced by the solo Beatles stuff as well.
Mm. Yeah, when the studio productions start getting bigger, and Smith, you can start hearing, okay, he's going there.
But on a practical level, it was so nice because he made those. I'm probably going to get this wrong, but he made those first couple of records, I believe, with that Tascam cassette machine, which, you know, you can. Most of us had one a machine like that, kind of knocking about, and those early records, the one that he's got coming up, Roses, on. You can hear it's just kind of a four track, you know, he's just got he's bounced his double track vocal down, and he's got I don't know what that pump organ is that he's got going through it, but it's just, the whole thing is incredibly one note, and it always felt so attainable and very achievable. Like, in a way, I guess punk rock was in like the mid to late 70s for a lot of bands. It's just for singer-songwriters who want to sort of make records like the Beatles, you know, there was just something so inspiring about how simple and yet at the same time massive he was able to make these records with this extraordinary limitation. I think it's all to do with how much work he was able to do on his guitar with those chords, and
Always melody imbued into every single chord.
Yeah,
I mean, it's mastery of a very simple recording technique, isn't it? You can't just learn that overnight.
He's a beautiful guitar player, basically. Yeah. And it just means that, and a sensational lyricist. And when you have those two things, that's kind of all you need. But because it's so, he's never just strumming away on some chords and singing some songs. It's so intricate and so beautiful that you know, it could be Rubber Soul.
Nick, you obviously didn't have too much of a role to play in selecting of this song. If you were to have chosen your favourite Elliott Smith song for today, what would it have been?
I think it has to be this one.
Really?
I think we have the same taste. We're the same human being now.
Yeah, that's what's happened.
It can't be any other.
As soon as you said we were doing it, I just listened to this song.
Really?
Yeah.
That's funny, and I hadn't told you that was the choice.
No. Wow.
There was the second choice was Ugly Before. Is that what it's called?
Yes, it is. Yeah, Pretty Brackets. Pretty, I don't really know exactly. Pretty Ugly Before, yeah.
Pretty Ugly Before, yeah. Very good. Well titled, Elliott. But yeah, it's that's the side, because it's interesting to note how influential he's clearly been on well, someone like Phoebe Bridgers, for instance, who is now obviously like the primary influence for so many young artists, especially like, you know, I think like a whole swathe of like Gen Z bedroom singer-songwriter people, and they've all been so heavily influenced by Phoebe Bridgers. And Phoebe Bridgers, I mean, to be honest, when she first came out, it was like, whoa, okay, she's doing Elliot Smith.
Yeah.
And you know, obviously she has such a very much her own take on it, but that was one of the first artists I'd ever heard where it was like, oh, your primary influence that you're wearing on your sleeve is Elliot Smith. And you know, it's funny, he's gone from that sense of, you know, real obscurity. I remember feeling like no one really knew who he was, but maybe that was just in the south of England at school in 2006. But like, he's kind of on the map in that Beatles way. He's just one of the kind of the big
influences. Yeah,
maybe Phoebe Bridgers opening that gate for people to him. I think the reason I'm saying that all is because songs like Pretty Ugly Before and stuff like that, I feel like that side of him still hasn't, and maybe Coming Up Roses to an extent, hasn't been explored in that same way. You know, that kind of brighter, more up pop version of him is yet to be fully. And that's the kind of slightly nerdier, like sillier, like sweeter side of him that I kind of always preferred. I feel like if he was at school, like if you were at school with Phoebe Bridgers and Elliot Smith, I feel like you'd be scared of Phoebe Bridgers. She'd be maybe a bit mean to you. But Elliot Smith would be your like nerdy best friend.
Yeah, you know? I think that's quite a good way of looking at it.
Oh, we can't talk about Coming Up Roses and not mention that music video. That was something we referenced.
Emily, yeah.
When we were making our second record, we did a song called Losing You, and we were working with Mark Jenkin, who's an amazing director from Cornwall. And we just sent him that, because we didn't have any budget and it was the lockdown. So we just sent him that Coming Up Roses video. And we're just like, well, they made this happen with that video, so we can do it with that. But yeah, just he's so cool in that. You can tell he's so insecure and just trying. He's got some cool shades on and he's trying his best.
Right. What was it that you liked about it?
Just that it was clearly done, you know, just him and a guy with a camera, and they had no plan whatsoever. And it was, they had
$20 music video.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. And it's just good proof of, and it's similar to his, I suppose, his recording technique on those early records. Just proof that you can make really beautiful art with, you know, very little pressure or time or money, you know.
Yes. And I should say, a shameless plug, but Ross Harris, who made that music video, was a former guest on this podcast, and he was kind of saying that was the reason that Elliot Smith wanted to work with him on the video, is because like he had a much looser plan, and it was a lot more relaxed, and it was just kind of focused around having fun rather than any sort of like big budget pressures. So if anyone's listening, do check that out from season one of this podcast. I can send you the link. How did you two both come to Elliot Smith? What was your sort of like discovery of his work?
I think I had XO on CD. It was from like my bandmate in like year eight's older brother lent it to me or something like that, which I feel like is very classic Elliot Smith. Like your bandmate's older brother. He was cool as well. He used to like smoke rollies in his bedroom, and you know, and he had great music taste. Actually, it's funny. He was Pat Ashby.
Shout out to Pat Ashby.
Yeah. He was great. He got me into lots of that stuff. I think he was just like 10 years older than us and had actually just been around and was buying those records as they were coming out. So he passed that on. And so I would just listen to it in my CD Walkman, very stoned, in history class, you know.
I think I came onto Elliot Smith quite a lot later, like in my sort of early mid-20s. I think I was recording an album and the engineer just would play it, and I instantly got into it off that. But yeah, I weirdly wasn't there in my teens. I think I was into my teens.
You were more of a shredder. You rocked. Yeah. You rocked harder than I did. I was more of a bedroom thinker. You were actually out there rocking. but you know, it's come to fruition with the two of us with our stuff. I hope it doesn't seem too obvious. There's a song called Easy Tiger on our second record where I feel like you can hear that his influence in it, in the sense that it's kind of like double tracked vocal and kind of brooding and a bit dark. But I mean, it wasn't intentionally written in that. But you can hear sometimes it kind of him seeping through. But it's funny, often we'd probably be more influenced by the Beatles or something, and it will accidentally come out in the same way as maybe, as you know. So that's an interesting one too.
And I was reading an article, an interview, sorry, with you, Will, where you said that the second Elliott Smith record, the self-titled record, which Coming Up Roses is on, was the album that I think at the time you saw that was most sort of detectable in your own work.
Yeah. Did I say that?
I think you were listing your, I think, your 9 favorite albums, of which the self-titled album was one.
Yeah. No, I think that makes plenty of sense, and probably for the reasons we've expressed over the last 20 minutes, I think. I love those first two albums for some reason. I don't know why. I think, you know, every record he put out is wonderful. I've listened to and I've enjoyed, but I always kind of gravitate towards those first two. I think because he was just discovering him as a solo artist. So it was kind of his escape in a way, like his secret shame on, you know, in the cupboard under the stairs kind of thing, and you get that feeling.
And the other thing that you said in that interview, not to put you on the spot, but you said that it wasn't necessarily his best, but it's your favorite. Which one do you think is his best, his kind of outright best?
I think EXO is his best, like as in terms of like a cohesive record and how well it's made. And it kind of has that, it straddles the line between those earlier few and then the ones that came after that get, you know, a little plusher. And he's clearly got more scope for other musicians joining in and stuff. EXO is kind of that middle ground. It's kind of the revolver. Coming up roses everywhere you go. Red roses. So you got in a kind of trouble that nobody knows. It's coming up roses everywhere you go.
To finish us off, is there anything that you wanted to add in about Coming Up Roses, about Elliott Smith, about, you know, anything else?
No, I might ruin it by saying something stupid right at the end.
Nick, how about you?
I think in this song, it's got sort of some of the most interesting vocal scanning I've ever heard in a song. The melody almost sounds completely random in the way that he's singing it, but it's you know, it's so considered, but it's almost impossible to sing along to unless you know it very intimately. I just love that about him.
A junkyard full of false stars, and I don't need your permission to bury my love under the spinlight bulb. It's very like he wrote that line out on the page first, because it's a great line, and then figured out how to sing it later, maybe. Maybe one of those, like a Morrissey style thing.
Yeah.
So thanks to Will and Nick for being our final guests of this season on the podcast. And thank you very much for joining us over the past 6 months or so. We'll be putting the show on ice for a little while, but if you'd like to stay in contact, you can follow us on social media. We're at My Fave E. Smith Song on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. That's pretty much it for now. Thanks again for all your support. We'll see you soon.